So, to start off, could you please just introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name is Terry Lynn, my project is the Women with Disabilities Experiences of Violence on College and University Campuses. I'm one of the Young Women Project Leaders at Springtide Resources this year. I consider myself a disability activist, a feminist, and most people know me as someone that uses a manual wheelchair or crutches. I self-identify as a psychiatric survivor, and I'm a very open-minded, thoughtful, and compassionate woman that wears a lot of hats.
So, can you give us like any stories or anything that's shocked you into activism?
I can say a little bit about what motivated me to do this particular project. I've been a student for a very, I'm not currently a student, but I've been in school for a long time. As a young student in residence, I wanted to meet other people on my floor. So I decided with my apartment mates that we would do like an open tea house. And as it turns out, men and women came to these tea parties, as we called them. But later on, we were asked to shut down because issues of, issues related to ableism and issues related to like violence against women's issues and also poverty issues and stuff like that were coming out, and we were trying to do activism on campus. And even though we were actually having those meetings from our own apartments, the university had shared with us that we were not actually university staffs, or we weren't residence dons, and so we couldn't support each other to do this kind of activism. So it was a very interesting response from the university environment that got me involved in this kind of project.
Why is there still such a negative connotation with women that have disabilities? Like, most of the time, they're expected to raise a household and take care of people who can't take care of themselves. So, what happens when the tables are turned?
So I think that's a really interesting question. Women with disabilities are often stigmatized, especially in the earlier feminist movement, because we were considered not real women in lots of ways. And to explain this, I could say that women with visible and invisible disabilities were considered to not be strong women. And I put that in quotations, right? And it is often thought that women with disabilities have a dampened idea of what it means to be strong and independent. But to be strong means so many things. And to say that women with disabilities are not strong is almost meaningless because the statement is posed in such a narrow way sometimes. And I'm relating it to like the early idea of feminism before the third wave feminist movement. I would argue that the disability community is very strong and dynamic, and that disability communities can, like, we continue to contribute to the community and to the lives of others in the community. And so that's how I would open that question. And then you had a question around, being expected to raise a household and have families and stuff like that. Often, people are quite surprised when women with disabilities have that role, because they consider the disabled woman not adult enough to take on, and I'm using quotations all over the place, yeah? Not adult enough to take on those responsibilities. And so often if a woman with a disability chooses not to parent, it's assumed that it's because of their disabilities or the way they present to the world. And really, the choices that women have would be to parent or not to parent, right? Lots of women with disabilities parent very well, and everyone needs supports, right, in the community to do those kinds of things well. And I have to say that, when we're talking about households and families and what that looks like, often we're talking about an ethnocentric, heterosexual, ableist view of how that's supposed to play out. So we're not necessarily thinking about same-sex couples and families, or we're not thinking about cultures that have, often in other cultures, people raise children in communities, and it's the extended family has responsibility for the child and stuff like that. So that's sort of how I would answer that question.
You mentioned that the disabled community is still very prominent in the larger community, but it seems like in a lot of mainstream media, you guys are like the invisible, the other. Why do you think that it's so easy for people, and especially women, to become that invisible other when they have disabilities?
Mm-hmm. Well, I will say that the invisibility comes certainly from, because you mentioned women and then also women with disabilities. So a lot of these issues of invisibility or silencing comes from patriarchy, and certainly it stems from ableism. And I think when you're looking at, if we look at the dominant ideas of what it is to be a, in quotations, valid person, the valid individual is the able-bodied or the person who gives an able-bodied appearance, right? I think much of the time people can't imagine things outside of their own experience. Mm-hmm. And that in itself is a form of oppression. So so I'll give you an example. One of the things that is often assumed in able-bodied culture is that women with disabilities have their needs taken care of, or that women with disabilities are sheltered. Like I've heard a lot of this before, right? And people have this idea that there are tons of services out there for women with disabilities, and there's like good social supports in Canada and things
right,
like that.
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily the case. Certainly, like a lot of women with disabilities do live in poverty. They don't have access to things like voting in the same way that able-bodied culture has access to. And certainly, women with visible and invisible disabilities have much lower rates of employment and much lower rates of just having like economic wellness in that sense. And I think when people assume that all of our needs are taken care of, or they assume that that's what we want, as opposed to like legitimate hardcore citizenship, that's something that needs to be teased out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because there's so much in the community that, first of all, the contributions of women with disabilities are quite extensive, and secondly, the idea that because there are some services, and the idea that they are good services, or that those services always consider our points of view, is not necessarily the case.
Why is it that sexism makes the struggle for women with disabilities all that much harder?
Yeah, women with disabilities are often pejoratively viewed as bodies that are perpetual children. And this is an assumption, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
But there seems to be this idea that because our bodies are different, we don't actually grow into adulthood. So there is that idea. Women with disabilities are often seen as unsexy or unsensual because our minds and bodies are different. We are not seen as nurturers, even when women with disabilities take on nurturing or caring roles. And when we choose not to care for others, it is often assumed that we do this because of disability, but this is not necessarily true. Our points of view are often not taken seriously as a result of these assumptions, right?
Mm-hmm.
So as a woman, you know, I can only speak from my own experience, it's always about walking down the sidewalk, right? Because I have visible and invisible disabilities. So people often inquire, and often when I am, you know, going to community centers or going to work or whatever, people will stop me. And basically, sometimes you get into interactions where you're not sure if, like, okay, was that interaction because I was a woman or because I have a disability or because
right.
I'm really small? What kind of discrimination was that exactly?
Right. It all just kind of melts together into one giant.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. You said your event is, like you mentioned previously, it came out of your university choosing to shut down your activism.
Mm-hmm.
So why did you choose to host this event focusing mainly on the challenges within college and university communities?
Right. Well, basically, I chose to focus the project on violence on university and college campuses, because I'm very interested in the topic of violence. I have experienced stalking specifically on campus in the past, and I also had my wheelchair stolen on campus, and it was stored on the top of a staircase at, in an all-male residence. So that's so there is like a personal connection to that piece. But recent studies on violence on university and college campuses don't include violence against women with disabilities at all, or they don't think about it, right? Again, it's the invisibility piece. And they also, these studies also tend to not address at all the experiences of genderqueer women on campus and the challenges that they face. And I mention that because genderqueer individuals do have an increased experience of violence in general. And I would say that on campus, although that information doesn't exist, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's an important piece, too. Both genderqueer women and women with disabilities experience violence at much higher rates than their counterparts. I also choose to focus my project on college and university campus environments because I had some of that experience.
Do you think that college and university campuses provide more opportunities for abuse?
College-aged women are at high risk for all forms of violence against women. The highest rate of intimate partner violence is actually among young women that are between the ages of 16 and 24. Incidents of sexual assault are very high on university and college campuses. And also, more than half of all stalking victims are between the ages of 18 and 29 years of age. So young women are at high risk of violence in the university and college environment. And I also feel like women who experience violence on university and college campuses also have fewer choices because they may have experienced, for example, sexual harassment in a classroom setting, and then they need to go back to that class if they want to continue going to school, that kind of thing. Or if they've experienced sexual assault in residence or around campus, It is usually a smaller community than the community at large. And, you know, certainly women who do experience violence on campus, sometimes they are asked to leave the campus environment. And that's really placing a huge burden on the person that's experiencing violence.
You mentioned violence a lot, and I mentioned violence as well. Why do you think violence is so prevalent, and especially against disabled women?
I think that violence is prevalent, again, because of patriarchy, because of the power difference. And especially, you know, violence is always about power. And I think the experiences of violence against women are higher for women with disabilities. And this is because, you know, sometimes women with disabilities stay in violent situations longer because they have lesser access to resources. For example, one thing that has come out in the focus groups is that some women's centers that are associated with universities are not accessible. So there are, like, those obvious barriers. And sometimes women with psychiatric disabilities are often not believed when they report violence. And women with augmentative communication difficulties, so women that might use a bliss board or have difficulty speaking, may have challenges getting support and reporting the abuse. Mm-hmm. Also, culturally deaf women, right? Like, that's a linguistic minority. And sometimes that group of women has extreme difficulty in terms of accessing health services, accessing counseling, those kinds of pieces. And so all of those things sort of contribute to women with disabilities experiencing greater rates of violence. And, you know, often what happens too is a woman's disability can be used as an excuse for violence to occur, right? Mm-hmm. But often a woman's disability is used for an excuse, which comes from comments like, I hit you because I get stressed out, because I take care of you, but sometimes it's too much. But of course, there is never excuse for violence. Mm-hmm. And I think it goes back to what I said before. Like there is this myth that women with disabilities are quite sheltered in their communities and stuff like that, and or that the people that are taking care of them are nice or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. Like there's all of those assumptions. When we know that statistically, none of those assumptions really hold up, and the fact that women with disabilities are seen as vulnerable, and often this is actually not true, because what makes us vulnerable is like the power structures that exist and the ableism that exists, right?
Mm-hmm.
But certainly, someone who is attempting to commit violence might see a disabled body as like an easy target. So all of those pieces contribute to women experiencing violence at higher rates. Mm-hmm.
You held your workshops last week, I believe, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Can you just briefly talk about those? Like, for example, who was involved and what you got out of it, or what your participants were able to get out of it?
Okay. All of the women that participated identified as women with disabilities that have gone to college or university. And women that participated included women that had been out of university for 5 years or less, or are currently attending university or college. We did partner with the Scarborough Women's Center to do a focus group because we thought it was important to include the community in Scarborough. And we will be doing a focus group at York, actually. However, the one at York got canceled due to lack of participants.
Mm-hmm.
So there are still some focus groups that will happen, about two more, and we just need to reschedule them.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we had, obviously, focus groups in our own space at Springtide as well.
Mm-hmm. For somebody going to these focus groups, what can they expect to come back with?
Well, some participants have noted that, okay, they've met other women that have had similar experiences, and that's kind of cool. There is a $5 gift certificate for participation, and you also don't have to pay for transportation. Like, we give out TTC tokens. And the women participants, obviously, like, the piece that comes out of this research, I want to make sure that they're included at the highest degree possible. So those women will be included in terms of the resource guide or the magazine, whichever we choose to create, that's going to go out to university and college campuses, directed towards students but also towards administration.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So we talked before about some of the experiences that you've had and the experiences of violence that are on campus. So how can these challenges be met and overcome by the communities and the universities?
So university and college campuses have an obligation, actually, to make their facilities safer for students who attend them. There needs to be more of an effort to do outreach to disability communities, the LGBTQ community, and the deaf and hard of hearing community, and all groups of marginalized women, right? Because violence doesn't discriminate. Although we know that there are groups of women that experience more violence, any women can experience violence at different times in their lives, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in the focus groups, there have been suggestions to set up a student-led education program for students and faculty, and to include women with disabilities in the creation of anti-violence and anti-discrimination policies in particular. And it was also mentioned by one of the participants that, we really do want women with disabilities to show up in such policies, and that there are resources for these women is essential, right? So there's been a suggestion of, like, a disability-specific violence against women policy. In universities and communities, it is often thought that women with disabilities are sheltered, and I think we've already talked about that.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there's lots of pieces. So, for example, I come from a place where I think the universities and colleges should be absolutely obligated to report all incidences of violence that happen on campus. And when these media alerts go out, they also need to be in accessible formats so that people with screen readers can read them. You know, that would assist people with learning disabilities and also sensory disabilities and being able to access that information. We need to make sure that women with disabilities, when they're on campus, they have access to accessible health services on campus and accessible women's centers. And that when they show up for community-type activism about violence against women, that their needs are put into consideration and that they're not sort of looked at as an outsider if they come and try to participate in these kinds of events. I think those pieces are really important. And I know there has also been mention in the focus groups of like vandalism and particularly vandalism in LGBTQ specific spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And so what does that really mean for students on campus and they're needing to feel safe, right?
Mm-hmm.
One piece that we did talk about as well in the focus groups was the continuum of violence. And people making comments to people with disabilities all the time, you know, saying, oh, if I knew I needed to be in a wheelchair, I wouldn't want to live, or I don't know what I would do if I went crazy, lost my mind, or crippled,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
So there's all these, like, negative connotations about people with disabilities that actually do constitute violence because they actually contribute to a culture where it's not okay to have a disability.
So anybody who's interested in these events, I guess taking part in these events, or if you're interested in volunteering or getting in contact with your organization,
mm-hmm.
Springtide Resources.
Right, yep.
Right. How can people go about getting in contact?
Okay. Well, I'll start by talking about the volunteer piece.
Sure.
Students that want to volunteer for Springtide can get in touch with Lorne Paris, and her contact information is 416-968-3422, and she's at extension 23. She also has an email address, which is lparas, P-A-R-A-S, at womanabusepreventionpreventionprevention.com. I did want to mention that there's also another young women's project happening, and this project is called Hello Hello, and this workshop series is for newcomer queer and trans youth, or anyone too cool for gender labels. This workshop series is meant to help youth understand better the issues that affect them, and there is a focus on activism, and the person that's in charge of that project, her name is Kim. And Kim's contact information is, again, the same phone number, 416-968-3422 at extension 29. And we also have a deaf women's program here. And it just the goal of the program is to increase services and supports for deaf women who have experienced violence or need supports around violence and community stuff. And the woman that's in charge of the Deaf Women's Program is called Anita Harding. And people can email Anita at aharding, H-A-R-D-I-N-G, at womanabusepreventionpreventionprevention.com. And to reach me, you can call 416-968-3422 at extension 31 if you're interested in the women against the women with disabilities discussing experiences of violence on university and college campuses. Sorry, it's a long title.
That's okay. That's all right.
Yeah.
So just before we wrap up, is there anything else that you'd like to add, like a final comment or something?
I'm just very excited to be doing this work, and I feel like good things will come out of it. That's what I feel. The focus groups have been very very informative, very enriching. So I'm excited to continue to work in the community and come out with a final product. that people can access.
Okay, that's great.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much for calling in.